Ideas matter. Ideas matter. This is Dialogue.
Hello and welcome to Dialogue. Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi has wrapped up his recent visits to Australia and New Zealand, which are believed to have further stabilized China's ties with both countries. So are China and Australia putting bilateral difficulties behind them as the ties are back on track? What challenges remain in China-Australia relationship as the U.S. continues to deepen its containment policy over China? With the stay of the two giant pandas in the Zoo of Adelaide likely to be extended, what is to be expected in a more mature, stable and fruitful partnership between Beijing and Canberra? Joining me today are Chen Hong, professor at East China Normal University, David Ma Hong, executive chairman of Ma Hong China Investment Management, and Warwick Powell, senior fellow at the Taihe Institute and chairman of Smart Trade Networks. Welcome to Dialogue. Professor Chen, I will start with you. You know, this year marks the 10th anniversary of the relationship between, or the comprehensive, strategic partnership between China and Australia. It is also, you know, Foreign Minister Wang Yi's the first trip in 7 years to Australia. So what do you make of the trip? You know, what are the highlights of the trip?
Well, first of all, this is actually the, as you said, the first trip after 7 years. In particular, you know, against the background of the past several years when China-Australia relations suffered an unprecedented deterioration due to the sabotage of the previous Scott Morrison administration's policies. So after the Labour government took office, Australia's China policy has had a drastic change towards a less confrontational attitude, which was positively responded by the Chinese side. Now, bilateral relationship has been normalized and stabilized. We need to maintain this positive momentum. So I think this is actually the most important factor that has been, you know, promoting, you know, to the two sides to be, you know, meeting each other, to be exchanging opinions with each other. And Foreign Minister Wang Yi's visit is apparently one of the highlights of the normalization process. So this is, I think, what is actually the motivation and also the significance of this visit.
Mm-hmm. Warwick, you know, what would you say about the relationship? You know, where are we now? So we are back on track after some, let's say, you know, ups and downs, or mostly downs over, you know, during this pandemic era and after that. But then we do see, you know, the warming up of the relationship. You see the lifting of the restrictions on some of the trade issue over there. So are you, say, positive about this relationship now?
Look, it certainly is a positive step forward and really builds on the visits to China last year of Prime Minister Albanese and also Foreign Minister Wong. The critical issues at stake now is to stabilize the relationship at a diplomatic level, and I think that has been achieved with the resumption of official high-level dialogue as well as ministerial level visits. And at the same time, what it's allowed is for the issues that really do bring China and Australia together in a very fundamental sense to be addressed. And they are, of course, the issues of economic cooperation through trade in particular, but also ultimately in terms of issues such as investment. On the trade front, Australia and China have continued to trade significantly over the last 10 years and even over the last 3 years, with trade levels last year reaching record highs. Trade is vitally important to a trading country like Australia, and China is Australia's greatest trading partner. Having good relationships at a government-to-government level is a ballast that underpins the stability of the trading environment for businesses involved. So I think it's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. David, you know, how do you look at this relationship? Well, we know that the cornerstone or this very important part of this relationship, you know, is between China and Australia, China and New Zealand, is trade and investment. I mean, if you look at the people's expectation, for example, somehow later this month, you know, these tariffs on Australian wine will be lifted. You know, if you look at the market share of the wine in the China market, for example, previously it's about 35% of the China market that's represented by Australian wine. Of course, after the tariffs, it's down like more than 97%. So we do see the complementary nature between, say, Chinese market and Australia, or Chinese market and New Zealand here?
We do. And the thing is, though, that it was China that extended the olive branch to Albanese's government when they won the election. They initiated what is the current rapprochement. And yet, if you look at it, the real issues that China was quite rightly offended by was when people were dying in great numbers in China and in Australia and around the world, the Morrison administration joined the position Washington wanted to take to use the pandemic to further pressure China and try and push it when it was weak. So it was an appallingly motivated stand. And on that basis, I think the Australian government has a lot to do still to repair the past and rebuild trust. I don't hear any language that says they're changing their positions on the general relationship with the US. I mean, we look at Australia and essentially its security and military security establishment has hijacked its foreign affairs culture. And it dominates the definition of what is China and what is China's influence in the region. So unless Australia can seek or regain its sovereign independence on these matters, China should be, and I think will be, extremely wary. But they're practical. So yes, the trade is going to improve. And I agree with Warwick. That's something which will certainly build in the coming year. But the underlying issues are still there.
Mm-hmm. The issues are still there. So Professor Chen, we know that, I mean, some of the worst point in the relationship between China and Australia, we know that Huawei was kicked out of the Australian market. There's a xenophobia inside the country, in the time running up to the pandemic. And also the Chinese scholars, including you yourself, your visa were affected at that point of time. Do you think, with the trade coming back to normal, these issues, people-to-people exchange, will also come back to normal?
Yeah, people-to-people relationship is very important because it promotes mutual understanding, which would further lead to cooperation that lead to further, to mutual benefits. So I think actually the constant and non-stop, flow of people, before the deterioration of the relations, have been, very important and conducive to the good relationship, in particular, between two countries, governmental and also, of course, trade relations. These are actually quite important. But on the other hand, of course, after the two countries, came into the deadlock, with the Morrison government sabotage, people-to-people relationship was also, affected. And that is really, a kind of politicization and weaponization of people-to-people exchanges, such as, as you mentioned, the academic exchanges, even, to this day, I know that just a few months ago, in Australia, there was a Chinese scholar who was molested, by the intelligence organization in Australia. I think such things, have been happening and actually have been affecting, people's, confidence and also goodwill towards Australia as a welcoming and a friendly country. But still, I think actually Foreign Minister Wang Yi's visit is very important because actually that will be promoting and, pushing forward a kind of more, open-mindedness that would actually further lead towards more and, more, normalized people-to-people relationship.
Mm-hmm. Warwick, last year, over 150,000 Chinese students studied in Australia, accounting for 21% of the total number of its international students. At the same time, over 380,000 Chinese tourists visited Australia in the first three quarters of 2023. Obviously, despite the strained relationship, we do see there's still a strong presence. In terms of people-to-people exchange, of the Chinese presence, travelers, students in Australia here.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we still have a long way to go before those numbers get back to 2019 levels. So I think we need to be level-headed about that. But as Chen Hong mentioned, the constant interactions of people is actually quite pivotal to making relationships not only work in a very basic sense, but open spaces and opportunities for them to improve and enrich each other. the pandemic, in a sense, showed us one thing about the relationship, and that is that distance did not make the heart grow fonder. In fact, it made it worse. And speeding up and reactivating people-to-people interactions, institutional collaborations at a research level, student exchanges and those sorts of things, I think is one of the important jigsaw pieces that needs to be really activated if we are to take advantage of the window of opportunity that has been reopened by the re-establishment and the normalization and the stabilization of political level dialogue.
Mm-hmm. Maybe partly due to this stabilization of political dialogue between the two sides. David, we do see, if you look at the tweet numbers, I would say it's a pretty resilient, the relationship. And if you look at data from the Australian Bureau of Statistics, for example, in the first 11 months of last year, tweet volume between China and Australia was approximately 281 billion Australian dollars. So that represents a year-on-year increase of almost 9%. That's, of course, despite these ups and downs in the relationship, we do see trade remains strong between the two sides. So that says a lot, probably, about at least this aspect of the relationship, trade between the two countries.
Oh, that's true. China's also one of China's motives to reach out a hand to Australia is to simplify the things it requires from Australia. They were receiving them by third-party countries in some cases, but the core trade had continued. I think the normalization was also a Chinese economic interest. But I was in Australia a few weeks ago, and I'm working with UBS, advising their clients on the current situation in China. And I noticed a change as compared to before COVID, which was the key people in these businesses, and they were Australian resources companies, they were Australian financial institutions. They're a lot more pragmatic, and they were better informed in what was the situation in China. They weren't just looking at the surface of the deflation of the property bubble, the slow recovery of consumption. Their perceptions, I thought, were far better informed. And I think the political tensions may have put some of these people under pressure to really dig in and look a lot more carefully at this market that's so important to them. So I think in terms of interactions, the other one is companies that trade with China and Chinese companies that trade with Australia. They always tend to be people that can get to know each other on a very common basis. There's a willingness to work together and make money together. Those things can mitigate some of the political standoffs that I think we're still facing in both Canberra and Beijing.
Mm-hmm. Well, Warwick, as David said, indeed there was a meeting between Foreign Minister Wang Yi and this business community in Australia. Of course, they want to know, more about China. They want to know the Chinese view in terms of the U.S. policy on China, for example. How stable that is. What are the challenges ahead? With that being said, if you look at, focusing on China, Australia, for example, the Australian Foreign Minister, Penny Wong, basically said, Australia's approach is consistent. We seek to cooperate with China where we can, disagree where we must, and engage in our national interests there. Sounds very much like, the U.S., cooperate, confront and conflict, that 3C approach toward China. The thing is, of course, now you have a Labour government there, your relationship is getting stable. With the change of the government, there's always a possibility, if not a likelihood, the relationship could get worse, downward. Or, if the U.S. continue to deepen its containment against China, and Australian approach, policy on China will be affected. And an ally of Washington, Australia, somehow has to follow the U.S. policy on China?
Look, this goes to the heart of the unresolved contradiction in Australian foreign policy. And that contradiction really, historically, is a question of Australia's history and culture on the one hand and its geography on the other. But more specifically, in the current era, it goes to the question of the relationship that Australia has towards America's objectives of asserting, reclaiming, or consolidating primacy in Asia, or, on the other hand, an Australian public policy recognition articulated on a number of occasions by the foreign minister that Asia is already a multipolar region. So we've got a contradiction here, because the commitment to the US military strategy in the region is fundamentally in contradiction with the idea of multipolarity in Asia and ASEAN centrality. So I think that that's the first thing to bear in mind, that there is this unresolved issue. And it's not one to be reconciled easily. How it gets reconciled into the future, I guess time will tell. Most Australian administrations would actually just prefer to use an Australian colloquialism, kick the can down the road, which basically means to hopefully not have to worry about it today. So I think that's the first thing. The second thing, and I'll just wrap up this point by noting that a recent survey last week of the Australian population concerning what the people of Australia believed Australian government policy should be, only 20% actually supported the idea that Australia should primarily be an ally of the US. 38% believed that Australia should adopt a more independent middle power position with influence in the region. 25% of people believe that Australia should actually do its best to steer clear of the troubles, stay out of things, be a little bit more reclusive, and 17% were uncertain. What that tells us is the vast majority of people actually don't support a policy that has Australia as primarily an ally of the United States. So there's some challenges yet in the future for Australia to address.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's from the public, very informative, Warwick. What about the debate among, let's say, professors, you know, intellectuals? Do people also engage with each other in terms of the direction of, you know, the development of Australia, relationship with China, with Washington, with, you know, India, Japan, or other countries in this region?
Look, there is a growing debate, if you will, in Australia. It has taken a little bit of time to warm up, particularly around the AUKUS question. AUKUS came onto the scene quite suddenly. The pre-election dynamics swept the current government up into the AUKUS program, and they're committed to it. But ever since then, there has been, in many ways, a slow burn, with serious research academics and senior statesmen from the Australian political community raising strategic questions, number one, as to whether or not the cornerstone feature of the AUKUS deal, which is these submarines, is actually strategically the right thing to do, number one. And number two, there's actually a whole lot of operational questions that are arising now around whether or not this entire program can even be delivered at all on time, let alone on budget. And if there are problems and risks around the delivery, it really puts the spotlight on the strategic rationale as well. So there is an emerging debate. It hasn't been particularly virulent, if you will, but it is emerging, and I'm expecting it to actually heat up a lot more over the next 12 to 18 months.
Mm-hmm. Indeed, Professor Chang, you know, former Prime Minister of Australia, Paul Keating, for example, not long ago, also criticized the government's China policy, hesitating as basically someone advocating for probably a stable, more stable, a closer relationship with China, rather than as a loyal ally to Washington only, let's say. So there are some... interesting debate. I would say, you know, that's very useful in terms of the relationship with China, with Washington there. But of course, you know, Wang Yi is basically, you know, meeting with Paul Keating also caused some stir among the opposition party. Tell us, you know, how do you see that?
Mm. Paul Keating has always been an, you know, outspoken figure, you know, during his prime ministership and after his retirement. He's worried that the current Labour government is still takes up some anti-China legacy from the Morrison government, from Morrison cohorts, such as AUKUS. You know, he said AUKUS is the most stupid deal that Australia has ever made, which I totally agree. So it is not, you know, Penny Wong that he has criticized. It is the insensible following of Washington's hegemonic Indo-Pacific strategy that he has been vehemently, you know, attacking. So I think, you know, as you said, you know, some people, including the opposition people, who are now, you know, trying to make an issue out of Minister Wang Yi's meeting with Keating, they all actually, you know, wanted to frame up, or you know, Wang Yi and Keating trying to, you know, concoct a conspiracy theory. But I think actually, you know, on the whole, you know, the Australian foreign policy under Penny Wong has been going on, you know, towards the improvement of the relations with China. I think actually the diplomacy, you know, that has been absent in, you know, some of the previous foreign ministers in Australia, in particular during the Morrison times, you know. But Penny Wong, you know, made it quite clear that Australia attached great importance to China when she made that trip to Beijing, you know, on 21st December 2022, which was the 50th anniversary of the diplomatic relationship between China and Australia. So I think actually, you know, some things, you know, for example, you know, Penny Wong obviously would be making some remarks which I definitely do not agree about China. But I think actually, you know, she has been on the whole, you know, having adopting this kind of forward-looking perspective when making decisions and policies regarding China.
Mm-hmm. You know, Professor Chen, Wang Yi, you know, in addition to meetings with, you know, of course, officials like the foreign minister, Penny Wong, interestingly, he also met the opposition leaders like Peter Dutton on March 20th. So that's, you know, if not the first time, I think that's rare in the sense, you know, to meet the opposition parties for Chinese, visiting Chinese officials, you know, for a particular country. So what does that say? You know, China is, can we say China is trying to make efforts to make friends, not only with the people, the officials, of course, from the government, but also with the people, you know, in the future that will be in the government?
Yeah, I think Minister Wang Yi's meeting with Peter Dutton is indicative of the openness or an open-mindedness on the Chinese side. You know, such meetings and exchanges of opinion are also good, as they are helpful for the two sides to know better about each other. So in fact, I do hope there should be more of such meetings with the opposition, with the other parties, like the Greens and other, you know, minor parties. Peter Dutton's remarks this time, I think, are quite positive. And such willingness to communicate is, I think, beneficial to Australia's national interests too. So, you know, in Western systems, the political systems, there's always, you know, the governing party, incumbent party, incumbent party, and also the opposition party biting each other. It's almost like a biting game. But still, you know, I think actually for China adopts a kind of, you know, balanced attitude towards various, you know, political forces and trying to, you know, assume a, you know, a proactive and a constructive attitude towards various political forces in Australia.
Mm-hmm. David, you know, shift a little bit to China, you know, in New Zealand relationship in a similar manner. Now in Australia, in New Zealand, there's a, you know, relatively new government, you know, since October. How do you characterize their China policy? Is it anything different from the previous government, for example?
Chris Luxon will do everything to maintain the tone and the content of Helen Clark and John Key. John Key is a close advisor to Chris Luxon. So this is where his intention is. Two of his ministers, one of the ministers, our foreign minister, was recently in Australia, and he made statements about New Zealand joining AUKUS too. But he is a minority party and a troublemaker. It's a very fractious, internally fractious coalition. So it's tough for the Prime Minister to manage, but in the end, it matters what he says. And I don't see any change in New Zealand-China policy. But there has been some weird entertainment of a thing they refer to as AUKUS 2, which I don't really understand, because AUKUS is about building nuclear-powered submarines and intelligence and sharing of technology. That happens anyway between New Zealand and Australia, excuse me. And we have Five Eyes, which is not an alliance, but an agreement to share intelligence. So we don't need to do anything different. And I'm very encouraged by Warwick's recitation of those statistics. I think New Zealand would come out quite similarly. which means the populations of both countries just want to get on with China. And the governments are at odds because they seek power greater than their own countries give them by being associated with Washington. And that happens in New Zealand too. But I have a lot of confidence in Luxon. I think he's someone who is very steady. He had a lot to do with China and does understand the country. So I'm quite optimistic that we'll hold the line.
Mm-hmm. Of course, there are reports the Prime Minister is coming to China soon. So hopefully that will, you know, add like more say elements of stability and you know, better relationship between China and New Zealand. Warwick, back to China-Australia. You know, of course, we know that Foreign Minister Wang Yi mentioned about the two giant pandas in the zoo of Adelaide are likely to extend to be their stay are likely to be extended for another, I don't know, 2 years or 4 years. So that's largely a welcome sign in terms of this relationship. If that's the case, what to expect in the near future, if not long term, in terms of China-Australia relationship here?
Look, I think that many people see a window of opportunity to build on the stabilization that's been achieved. I think that's one of the clear messages that has come out over diplomatic work over the last 12 months. The challenges, of course, as David has mentioned, really are the issues that simmer away under the surface or perhaps cloud the broader picture of Australia and its relationship to Asia, its relationship to the United States and, of course, China. The bilateral relationship is actually a very interesting one because it's a bilateral relationship with trilateral characteristics. The opportunities, I think, will be for the parties, meaning Australia and China, to also think broadly about their role and contributions to the region as a whole. So really think about how the bilateral relationship plays a role in creating a stable environment for peaceful economic development and for addressing the issues that many in the region concerned about, whether it's economic development or climate change and those sorts of things.
Thank you for being with us. I'm Xu Qingzhou. See you next time.